what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie the Radio Chick Ubellus, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another adventure here on Southern Sense. I'm live, Annie, the hostess with the least mostest radio chick, Ubellus. As you can see, I am alone. I do not have a co-host today, so I am running this by myself. Curtis is off doing some stuff for a speaking engagement, and Lucretia Hughes, who has Real News with Lucretia Hughes, would have been with us. But unfortunately, she is running around like a chicken with her head cut off. She's got a big event going on tomorrow featuring Judge Joe Brown. And she has a list of speakers that are absolutely fantastic, including herself. It is at Loganville, Georgia, which will be tomorrow from 12 until it's closing. The event is free, but if you do go, they do ask that you make a donation, and there'll be stuff there for you to do that. It is located at 4780 Center Hill Church Road. That's 4780 Center Hill Church Road in Loganville, Georgia. It's a really big event, and it's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be food and entertainment and everything for the whole family. So if you want to stop by and give a hand, and this is an event to promote MAGA, to promote Trump. So give her a shout out over there, Lucretia Hughes, with Real News, Lucretia Hughes. And, well, there is a flyer on the Beaufort Tea Party website. If you go there, you can see it. If you're a listener that is on our emailing list, the flyer was sent to you so that you can also scan in the heck they call this, these scan codes, and you can make a donation or find more about how to get there. So it's a great event tomorrow, and I'm sorry she's not here with her, and we wish her a lot of good luck. We've got a great show going on. We've got a lot to talk about. Our guests are Caitlin Wheeler. She's the ambassador for the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. She'll be our first guest, and that will be followed by Nanette Holt, who is an editor at the Epoch Times. She works over there with our friend Mark Tapscott. There is a lot going on, and we hit the news today with our feet running. And sometimes you can't make some of this stuff up. Jack Smith refiled the charges against Donald Trump. Now, if you remember, the Supreme Court stated that he does have presidential immunity, which they granted, which threw out a lot of these charges that Jack Smith had. And we thought this was done and over with, but nope, lo and behold, Jack Smith refiled the charges in a shortened version. And I'm trying to make sure I get this straight. He filed a shorter version of the previous indictment against him. It's a DOJ policy that the Department of Justice, and this is what makes it curious, the Department of Justice has this policy that if you're within a certain time frame between 60 to 90 days before an election, and that includes early voting. Early voting started in a lot of places on the 6th, on Monday. And wait, was the 6th Monday? No. Whatever. A lot of early voting starting on the second Monday of the month, which I guess the 9th coming up. I apologize. I'm a little... I don't have a co-host, so I don't know what I'm doing here. Anyway, so within 60 days of that, the Department of Justice says we don't file charges against candidates. We don't want to make it look like it's election interfering. So what does Jack Smith do? He is the special prosecutor hired by the Department of Justice. And there's questionability as to whether or not that hiring was legal because he did not get confirmed by the Senate. Whenever you have a special prosecutor, he's supposed to be presented to the Senate, and then the three-quarter majority, I believe it is, in the Senate. I could be wrong. If it is, someone out there in the chat room, let me know. Then approves the appointment of Jack Smith as special prosecutor. This has not happened. So there's the question of the legality of his authority to do this. So he now has filed in violation of the DOJ policy. And I do have a copy of the DOJ policy here in front of me. It is under the Justice Manual, Title 9, and it's called criminal. The section is 9-20.000, called Principles of Federal Prosecution. Subsection 260, initiating and declining charges, impermissible considerations. And, okay, here we go. It's in the final paragraph. In addition, federal prosecutors and agents may never make a decision regarding an investigation or prosecution, or select the timing of investigative steps or criminal charges for the purpose of affecting any election, or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or any political party. Here it is, folks, right here. This is directly off the DOJ's website. So what happens? Jack Smith filed these charges. Now, Judge Napolitano, and prove me right, when he appeared on Newsmax's Wake Up America, and he said about Judge Tanya Chutkan about this, he says, it's an unusual manner so that the public can hear the government's case before November 5th. This is in direct violation of DOJ policy in their own manual. Under the Title 9, Section 27-260, initiating and declining charges, impermissible considerations. All right. Judge Napolitano explains, so they're both in court, and the issue is a brand new indictment called a superseding indictment issued by a new grand jury based upon the Supreme Court's decision on immunity. He adds, so the old indictment is indictment changed Donald Trump with doing things as president. The Supreme Court says you can't do that. He's the president, but only personal, non-official acts can form the basis for a criminal prosecution of an ex-president. So the DOJ, the Department of Justice, gets a new indictment. They come into the courtroom with a new indictment. The judge says, what do you want to do? The defense counsel says, we want to dismiss the indictment. The prosecutors say, we want to reinforce the indictment. Now, he further goes on to say, in the real world, defense counsel would go first, and they would make a motion to dismiss. This is not the real world because the judge is letting the government go first. So they are defending the indictment before it's attacked. Now, why is she doing that? Because they are allowing the government to go first. They will lay out the evidence against Donald Trump before Election Day. If the defense went first, the government's brief wouldn't be due until after Election Day. It's one of the oddest things I have seen to allow the government to defend its behavior before the defendant is attacking its behavior. So last week, Special Counsel Jack Smith filed a new indictment against Trump for alleged efforts to alter the 2020 presidential election results that contain the same criminal charges, but narrows the allegations following the Supreme Court ruling that established broad immunity for former presidents. So what they're doing is now in direct violation of the DOJ manual and placing the case before the public, before the election, which is election interference. The very thing that they are claiming Donald Trump did in 2020, they are doing now, today, to affect the 2024 election. Well, folks, we do have a lot to say, a lot to go on. And with that said, those that listen know that we dedicate each and every show to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go out to police officer Joseph Russell McKinley. I'm sorry, Joseph Russell McKinney. I apologize, the Memphis Police Department, Tennessee. His end of watch was Friday, April 12th of 2024. And this is his dedication.
Fox 13 News at 9 starts now.
Close it down, officer.
We have a family that's grieving now. We have a wife that's grieving now.
How bad is it that somebody gonna come and shoot at a police?
We need urgent action from this whole community.
We ask our community to continue to pray for our officers.
Officer Josh McKinney was killed early this morning in the line of duty. It happened while he was investigating a suspicious vehicle. By the time the morning was over, two more officers were injured, and the suspect tonight is dead. Thanks for joining us as we continue to follow what's been our top story all day. I'm Daniel Wilkerson, Daryl Green, and Darcy Thomas have the night off. Tonight, the community is paying respects to that fallen officer. The Memphis Police Department has identified him as Joseph McKinney. Fox 13's Jack Bilyeu is live at MPD's Rain Station tonight, where Officer McKinney's car has been turned into a memorial. Jack, he left behind a wife, a young daughter. Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening, Daniel. The Memphis Police Association says Officer McKinney was only 26 years old. He'd been with the department about 4 years, first out of the Mount Moriah station, but most of that tenure here at the Rain station.
Everybody loved the guy. He's really well liked.
The flags are at half mast at MPD's Rain station. Beneath those lowered flags, Officer McKinney's car is covered in flowers from friends and fellow officers who came by to pay their respects.
It's absolutely the worst part of this job.
Matt Cunningham, president of the Memphis Police Association, says officers across the department are heartbroken, especially those who were on the scene when McKinney was shot. Video taken at Regional 1 shows officers learn McKinney had died and embrace each other, mourning their fallen friend and co-worker.
It's going to be a lot of trouble for the officers at the Rain station where they worked. We're going to have to deal with the aftermath of the mental trauma that they're dealing with. There's a lot of sadness down there.
Tributes to McKinney have been pouring in. His picture was put on the Jumbotron at Friday night's Grizzlies game. In a statement, the Memphis Police Department wrote in part, "Officer Joseph McKinney exemplified the highest standards of courage and dedication, and his memory will forever inspire us to serve and protect our community honorably." His alma mater, Munford High School in Tipton County, also paid respects in a post to Facebook, writing that he was part of the band and was known to his classmates as Rusty. He graduated in 2016, and less than 10 years out of high school, his life was cut short.
He was just starting out in life, just starting out in his career, which is, we're so short on manpower. He's exactly the officer that we need here, someone that comes here at a young age and ready to start a career and, spend two decades to help clean this city up.
Well, MPD is encouraging people to put flowers or notes on Officer McKinney's squad car as a tribute. The Police Association is also running a fundraiser for his family. You can find that link on our website, fox13memphis.com. Now, we'll be live out here again coming up at 10, where a prayer vigil is expected to take place. Daniel?
Jack, a sad day for the Mid-South and also for the community of law enforcement officers. Jack Beal, you starting our live coverage off at 9. Jack, thanks.
Officer Joseph McKinney was a shining example of courage, integrity, and selflessness. He put his life on the line.
We're glad you joined us tonight at 5. I'm Rudy Williams. Well, today, family, friends, and Memphis police gathered for the funeral of Memphis police officer Joseph McKinney at Hope Church. Now, McKinney was shot and killed in the line of duty on April 12th while responding to a suspicious vehicle call. The district attorney's office says McKinney likely accidentally died from gunfire from a fellow officer during a resulting shootout. Our Jay Shakur with moving moments from the service today, this afternoon. Jay, what stood out to you?
Rudy, a mixture of Officer McKinney's officers, co-workers remembered the 26-year-old for his dedication, a man always serving his community with a smile on his face. Officer McKinney worked at MPD for 4 years, serving out of the Raines Police Precinct. The department and the city of Memphis honored McKinney's sacrifice in several resolutions. Speakers also remembered fondly his time on the force, his love for laughter, and his ability and willingness to step in and help those he served with. McKinney leaves a loving family, including a fiance and a young child.
He wasn't just a good police officer. McKinney was a good partner. And when you're a good partner, that means you are dependable. That means that when I'm in trouble, you're gonna show up. When I call for help, I know you coming.
He had a kind soul. He'd always be there for anyone that needed it. He would give you the shirt off his back and the shoes off his feet.
Also today, flags at the Tennessee State Capitol are flying at half staff in remembrance of Officer McKinney. Rudy? Mm-hmm.
All right, Jay, thanks a lot. Well, before and after the services for McKinney, people from across the Mid-South paid their respects to McKinney's legacy in law enforcement. Arlia Williams continues our team coverage tonight in East Memphis, right outside of Memorial Park Cemetery, where Officer McKinney was laid to rest just a short while ago. And Leah, many people didn't know Officer McKinney at all, but just wanted to show their support today.
That's correct, Rudy. Some people that we talked to said they didn't know him personally, but they wanted to offer condolences and pay tribute to the fallen officer. Now, hundreds of people showed up to Hope Church and here to Memorial Park to say their final goodbyes. Friends, family members, law enforcement, and community members all came out to honor the life of Officer Joseph McKinney, some even wearing blue in support of the fallen officer.
The blue represents solidarity, both with the family, with MPD, with each other.
It was my way of showing that I support all of our officers.
His service was at Hope Church Monday afternoon, followed by his final ride and burial at Memorial Park on Poplar. Leslie Taylor with Memphis Crime Beat says she's saddened and heartbroken by Officer McKinney's death on the line of duty.
The officers told us about seeing their fellow officer on the ground, mortally wounded, and how can you have a response to that? It's so awful.
That's why many people who didn't know the officer personally still wanted to show up here to say thank you.
This shouldn't happen. They're out there to help us.
While these Memphians say the officer's life was taken too soon, they also hope McKinney's death will be a driving force for change.
We support them. We want to make sure something changes with public safety.
Officer McKinney was just 26 years old. He leaves behind a 4-year-old daughter and a fiance. Live in East Memphis, I'm Leah Williams.
All right, Leah, thanks a lot. A day full of emotion indeed. Well, a fundraiser for McKinney's family continues tonight. More than $169,000 already raised on Facebook since McKinney was shot and killed in the line of duty 10 days ago. Now, if you'd like to donate, we've got a link at abc24.com/now.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free. We led with grace, let it be seen. From sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, father, mother, sister, brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other. Soul of the nation, for all the next generation. Let us be known.
You're here watching and listening live to Southern Sense on all the different things. It's Facebook, YouTube, X, Twitter, Twitch. Oh, no, that is X. Our own homepage, southernsense.net. I'm your hostess with the least most is the radio chickadee, Annie. And as you can see, my co-host CS was not with me. We tried to get a couple of our usual stand-ins, and it just seems everyone seems to take the weekend off or has something else going on today. But it's great. It's great to be here with you. And I see a lot of the comments and people popping in. Thank you for those that are reposting over on YouTube and X. I want to point out, this is something I've been talking about several shows, the employment status and the numbers that the Biden-Harris administration have been giving. They have been reissuing them, and there is a huge drop. And I spoke about this last month, that unemployment for Native Americans dropped by 1.1 million. And employment at that point in July rose 1 million for foreign workers. Well, folks, it's still going on. The latest report came out. Let me get the number here. Bear with me as I find the right page. Okay, the numbers that have come out, Native American workers, the employment dropped by 1.3 million to a level of 129.7 million employed. Now, it rose for foreign-born workers. The foreign-born workforce has increased by 635,000 in the last report, which brings a total to 31.6 million. Think about that. For every four workers out there, one is a foreign-born worker. and possible illegal alien. American workforce is shrinking, and many people are just aging out of the workforce. Now, this is something we really have to take into consideration. With the wide open border, with the policy of giving amnesty to people simply for the fact that they're here for no legitimate reason, and they're taking over the American workforce, putting you and me out of business, putting you and me out of work. Now, consider, and I spoke about this a lot, Walmart, which I call Wally World, is now allowed to hire illegal aliens. The U.S. government, the Biden-Harris administration, gave our government permission, gave our Walmart, and God knows which other big box stores or big companies, they said, okay, you want cheap workers. Here's a way to do it. We'll allow you to hire illegal aliens. We'll give them a work visa, whatever they need. Yeah, here's the amnesty. No problem. Oh, and yes, if Harris becomes president, she's going to give them legal residence. She's going to treat them just like DACA. And what happens to America now at this point? Another Venezuela we become? Another Cuba? Have we lost America? I pray and hope not, folks. I really do pray and hope not. This is what is coming to America at this point. All right. I have to apologize because normally I'm a little bit more organized because I have Curtis here and we can talk about things beforehand and get my head straight. But I brought a lot of other things to talk about. I also want to repeat for those that are tuning in lately, if you are in Georgia or thinking about traveling to Georgia tomorrow, there is a large rally, a MAGA rally, that's being hosted by a friend of mine, Lucretia Hughes. She has her own show called Lucretia, The New News with Lucretia Hughes. Let me get it straight. So this will be tomorrow from 12 o'clock until whatever. It's entertainment and food for the whole family. They've got a boatload of speakers, including Lucretia herself. Judge Joe Brown, Derek Grayson, and a whole lot of others. They've got music and everything. Almost Persuaded and Matt Thompson are going to be performing. And the event is at 4780 Center Hill Church Road in Loganville, Georgia, which is just outside of Athens, Georgia. So if you think about going on there, check it out. And I hope you do. If not, if you are someone that is on our emailing list, you can get on it by going to SouthernSense.net. And I will post to you ahead of time when the show is, so you don't have to worry about finding it accidentally. It is posted. It is posted to people that I have emailed. So check it out. All right. I'm looking for the other stuff I had put aside to talk to. And pardon me for being a little disorganized here, but let's see. Just bear with me and apologize. Oh, here we go. This is what I wanted to talk about. This is written by our friend Mark Tapscott just last week. There is now, DOJ is doing surveillance on congressional staff. We got hints about this last week, and we were talking about it with Mark before. And it's like, well, is this true? And he was going to investigate further. And it seems to be. A nonprofit government watchdog wants the federal judge to pull back the curtain on illegal surveillance of Capitol Hill staffers. The watchdog group, let me find the name for it. It is called the Empower Oversight Group, which filed the lawsuit. It's a nonprofit foundation formed and now led by two veteran congressional investigators, Tristan Levitt and Jason Foster. Mr. Levitt was a senior counsel to the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability and deputy special counsel for the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. Mr. Foster was a senior counsel for Senator Charles Grassley, the Republican out of Iowa, an investigative counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee. So why is the DOJ surveilling them? The DOJ subsequently asked federal courts to bar the internet firms from informing the staff is being surveilled. In addition to five FOIA requests, the group opposed the DOJ motions asking the courts to impose non-disclosure order on the internet forums. The surveillance was accomplished via government demands on Google and other internet service providers for copies of correspondence and related documents by multiple congressional investigators. The court filing included copies of subpoenas issued by the DOJ to Google and other service providers seeking a broad range of records related to their accounts. So folks, it's not just someone like you and I that go out there on YouTube or Facebook or something like that. And, you know, we're talking about, well, I don't know, COVID or the election interference by the other side, ballot stuffing, ballot harvesting. Now they're going after government employees, staff members of Congress, staff members of the Senate. They're going after them. So now if they go after you and me, they can go after anyone. They go after you on Facebook, on YouTube, Google, Meta, whatever. So folks, this is what has happened. We do have our first guest in. Hey, let me get my records and everything all in order. I want to welcome to the show Miss Caitlin Wheeler, and she is with the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. I want to make sure I got that correct, because everyone says the Riley Gaines Institute. No, it's the Riley Gaines Center.
Yes, ma'am. You got that correct. How are you doing, Ann?
I am doing fine. I have to apologize that I normally have a co-host with me and I have all my stuff organized. So while my co-host is talking, I pull out the next. But because of this weekend, everything going on this weekend, there's election training, there's rallies going on, and so and so forth. And the backup co-hosts are all doing, one's doing a rally, one's traveling.
Yeah,
so me, myself, and I. So if I'm a little nuts, it's true.
That is totally fine. That's, I feel like life is just hectic, especially with this being the year it is. It is absolutely crazy. So I understand, and it's totally okay. It's just you and me, and it'll be a good conversation. I'm excited.
Well, you know, a lot of people know who Riley Gaines is. Right? She was a swimmer that got knocked out of any chance in professional sports or anything like that because of a man. A biological male who calls himself Leah Thomas. Now, there's one good thing that came out of this incident, because now he was barred from the Olympics. The Olympics said something about, no, you're a biological male, so you can't perform in this. But then they had the transgender, what was that, jujitsu or whatsoever? I mean, it's getting nuts out there.
Yeah, we saw on the Olympic level here back in the Paris Olympics in women's boxing, there were two male boxers competing at the Olympics for the women. And it was crazy. It was horrific to see men punching women in the face and then calling it sport. That used to be, sexual assault. That's assault, actually, not even just sexual assault. But it was horrible to watch.
Well, I couldn't get it because they barred him from the swimming, but they wouldn't bar him from the boxing and jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, so what was unique about the Thomas case, so Leah Thomas, Will Thomas, we'll just call him Thomas, he sued the Olympics to be able to, you know, fight for hopefully an Olympic spot on the women's Olympic team. They denied him and said that he wouldn't be allowed to compete in the women's category or even vie for a spot. But the reasoning for it wasn't because he was a man, which is the most obvious reason to all of us, I think. But it was because he had no prior USA qualifying times or times as a USA enrolled swimmer. So it wasn't even for the most obvious and most simple reason. So the problem with that is that doesn't just prevent him from not competing in the Olympics, but it doesn't prevent other men from vying for a spot, if that makes sense. So it is a victory for us, yes, but that doesn't prevent it from happening in the future in other sports to, you know, for other female athletes. So yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy world we're living in, Ann.
I know. They use a technicality instead of looking at the reality.
Exactly. Exactly. They're wanting us to deny objective truth, which is really the root of all of this. And it's a scary, scary, slippery slope that we're on, because once you start denying objective truth, what more are they going to ask you to do? You know, how far are you willing to go? And so that's kind of where we're at.
It is. Now, what exactly does the Riley Gaines Center do at the Institute for Learning?
Yeah, so at the Riley Gaines Center, we're really dedicated to amplifying the voices of those affected by these policies that allow men to compete in women's sports. We urge athletes and parents and coaches who are concerned citizens to join our fight. Really what we do is we give a platform to those who have been affected by this gender ideology in any sort of way. We've had athletes, we have a teacher who, her name is Jessica Tapia. Some of your viewers may have heard of her. She was a California school district teacher who got fired because she was a physical education teacher and she refused to abide by the state law, which would allow men, boys to use the girls' locker rooms that she must abide by preferred pronouns, biologically incorrect pronouns. So we have people all across the board. It's not just in sports. We know it's happening in schools. And so really just giving them a platform to not only share their story, but to empower others to speak up, because there's so much fear around this issue, which is quickly changing. I'm you know, proud to say that it is changing. I think more people are being encouraged, but encouraging others and empowering others to stand up and say, you know, this is wrong. We're not going to allow it to continue to happen. Ensure that women's sports and spaces, specifically in sports, that, you know, they remain fair and they remain safe for all athletes and for all women. So that's really what the center is for, is giving a platform to those people and a place to come and for people's voices to be heard, because they ultimately really do matter.
Well, you know, growing up, Title IX was being debated, and I was the first generation I was affected with. You're now three or four generations after, so I'm hiding my gray hair. But I do remember distinctly that in a lot of what we were doing, at one point we had co-ed gym. And at that point, they were kind of like being delicate and dancing around what type of things co-eds would do, whether or not it was like gymnastics or exercise or things like that. But now it's a completely different. They tested that to see how it went. And then when Title IX was passed in 72, you seem to see that they pulled back on it and they were adhering to Title IX. But in today's world, what was Title IX's intent, which meant gender at birth, but they didn't specifically write it in there because they didn't think it was needed. At that time, sex was male or female. And now they have changed what the word has meant, and they have twisted it to the point where it is whatever you think you are at the moment. And that is what you are battling.
Yeah, I mean, you said it so eloquently. Title IX was created to prevent sex-based discrimination, whether that be in education or sports. More broadly, it was designed for equal opportunity and equal playing field in sports. But this progressive society that we are currently living in, or at least is currently being pushed on us, to now have our current administration, the Biden-Harris administration, present back in April a new, completely new rewritten law of Title IX that equates sex with gender identity is the complete opposite of progressive. It is, in fact, regressive. The very rights that, you know, your generation and so many of you fought for is now being taken away. And so what's crazy is Title IX was designed to ensure equal opportunities for women in sports. But this new rewrite equates sex with gender identity, which effectively erases sex-based rights. Sex is now equated with gender identity, meaning that men who simply identify as women, meaning they could identify Monday as a man and then wake up Tuesday and say, now I want to identify as a woman. It's really as simple as that. These men, or any man for that matter, could take away both academic and athletic scholarships for women. They could be housed in women's dormitories with other girls. Your speech is also compelled. So you must abide by preferred pronouns, which are biologically incorrect pronouns. And if you do not abide by their language, or say you are a young girl who simply doesn't feel comfortable being housed with a man, if you go and simply ask for new roommates or express your discomfort, you can be charged with sexual harassment. Not the man that is parading around in your dorm or invading your private spaces. No, that's now deemed as brave and bold and courageous and all the virtuous words you want to throw at it in the eyes of our current administration. So that's really what's at stake. We're seeing the actual and literal destruction of our free society right before our eyes. And it's terrifying amongst all the other threats to our country that we're facing. It's a big one. Women's rights are under attack. And it's crazy.
Well, what gets me, because I went through reading Title IX last night, and these changes that we see that have allowed gender identity, if we want to call it that, was done by executive order. Now, this is a legislative act, Title IX, which they altered by executive order, which would probably make it unconstitutional. Because you cannot alter legislation unless it goes back to the House and through the Senate to be signed by the president. And instead, they've used the power of the pen to usurp the power of Congress.
Yeah, I'm familiar with all of the process. And so the way they did it was actually illegal. And so what's awesome about this is after the rewrite was administered and told that it would go into effect August 1st, which it has, 26 states, including your state, actually, Anne, of South Carolina, over half the country filed to sue and block this rewrite from going into effect in their state. And currently 21 of those states have temporarily blocked the rewrite. They have a preliminary injunction that was approved by the Supreme Court. It was voted in 5-4, which I think is absolutely crazy that four sitting Supreme Court justices voted against it is wild to me. It should have been a 9-0 vote. However, there are many states that have already been allowing this to happen, which is really sad. Another example I will give is a personal example, which happened in my home state of Illinois. My younger sister swam for a YMCA team. They shared the locker room with the YMCA members. And she went into practice after a practice one day, and she noticed men were changing in the locker rooms. These are men who identify as women again, but they're men. And she went to her coach. She went to the YMCA administration, let them know that this was happening. They said, oh, we actually, in fact, know this is happening. There's nothing that we can do about it. And if she felt uncomfortable, she could go and change in the individual locker rooms. And so from that point on, she did. But she came back to them and she said, you know, why don't you let these other parents who are saying they're 5- and 6-year-old and up young girls into the locker rooms to change? Why don't you let them know? And they said, no, we can't do that. That would be discriminatory and disrespectful. But in standing up and fighting for this, she was then removed from her swim team, kicked off of her swim team, and banned from a YMCA. So this is what we're seeing in my own home state of Illinois, which I'm working with legislators in that state to try to get bills passed to prevent it from happening. But we know that this is happening across the country in states like California, who are passing bills like the House bill they just passed a few months ago, stating that teachers are not allowed to let parents know if their child is identifying as a different sex or a different gender, which is also really scary, taking away parental rights. So it's a crazy world that we're having to even put legislation into place that defines or codifies the terms woman and man and male and female and boy and girl. It's absolutely absurd.
Well, what makes it even worse, they're now calling it a civil rights issue, which is what we did back in the 60s and 70s. He said, hey, listen, we're not getting a fair chance. You know, we're excelling at our sports, but no one is recognizing women in sports. At that point in time, it was thought that if you went to college, you were going there to find a husband. If you went into a business, you were probably going to marry your boss. And this is a true story, and I tell this all the time, that when I went in my junior year in high school, I was called in to the guidance counselor. What do you think you're going to do for the rest of your life? Blah, blah, blah. And I had ideas in my head. And I was starting to say that, and he cut me off, and he said, you know, why don't you take secretarial classes, get yourself a good job, and then marry your boss. And this is the true story. 3 years later, I graduated college from a technical college with a degree in business administration. I was walking back into the night classes of the high school, And that same high school guidance counselor, who was the football coach, gives you the mentality at the time, turns around and goes, well, Anne Marie, I am so glad to see that you're taking my advice and taking secretarial courses. And I looked at him very sweetly, batted my eyelashes, and I said, no, Mr. Hotchkiss, who has passed away, I am now here to teach one of your courses. I own a storefront business down the street with 13 part-time employees. I have a storefront travel agency. I'm here to teach the course. Ladies, don't let them push you down. Don't let them find a way to push back, which the Riley Gaines Center is doing. And exactly there, when you're teaching them to speak out, it's not just women. You're also teaching across the board, aren't you?
Yes, it's not just women. You know, in this fight, we need men, we need boys, we need parents and coaches, administrators, everyone to speak out, because it can't just be women. I always talk with parents who are reaching out. I get calls and texts and messages from parents every single day, sadly enough, that are reaching out and saying that we don't know what to do. We don't know how to tell our kid that we're going to have to pull her from her sport that she loves because there's a male competing and we're afraid for her safety. How do we tell our child this? What do we do as parents? And just reminding them to protect their kids. You know, men, we need strong men to protect our daughters, but also teach our men, our young boys, to be strong male figures as well. So just really letting parents know that they are their parent. They are their kid's parent. They have the ability to say no to things. Go to your school board, bring all your friends, family, other parents to these school board meetings and express your concerns. Because you're the one that is paying the government to work for you.
Well, one of the things that's happening with this movement of men being women and young girls are growing up being told, hey, wait a minute. This person, because they're physically different, is going to outcompete you. So you have no future in this. So sit back. That was happening to us in the 50s, 60s, 70s. They were saying, no, you can't do this. You can't grow up to be, say, a fighter pilot. You can't grow up to be a world leader. You can't grow up to be a master chef or, I don't know, a corporate head. You couldn't do those things, they were telling us. You're only good to stay home and make babies. Now they're doing the same thing to us now because these men are coming in claiming to be women. And now any chance for us to compete physically against them is taken away from us. So the I'm trying to think of the proper word, the self-esteem of that child is then crushed. Their hopes and dreams to be something better in the world is taken away. And that's what you and Riley Gaines are fighting for.
Yeah, it's really sad that that is the message we're sending to young girls across the country. I think of my own future daughters, you know, that's who we're fighting for. We're fighting for, you know, your daughters and granddaughters and future generations of women here. You mentioned the same tactics that they used before Title IX and saying that, no, you don't deserve these jobs and opportunities. But now they're saying they're actually threatening those opportunities that we have. For example, we were told, you know, if you speak out on this issue, you're not going to get into grad school. You're not going to find a job after college. You're going to lose your friends. You're going to lose all of these opportunities if you speak out and start speaking truth, really. And let me just say that is completely wrong. When maybe one door has closed here and there, many more have opened. And honestly, it's the most empowering thing you can do is stand firm in the truth or stand firm in what you believe in, whether you are on one side of the aisle or the other, at least stand for something, because too many people are afraid. Too many people, like our leaders in our current administration and organizations like the NCAA, who I'm currently in a lawsuit along with Riley and many other athletes suing the NCAA for not upholding Title IX, for allowing a male to compete with us and continuing to do so for the past 2 years. Many of these organizations have weak-kneed leaders. I truly don't believe many of these dads who are in the Supreme Court or in our current administration or the NCAA, I don't believe they truly would allow their own daughters to change in a locker room where fully grown adult men are changing and exposing themselves to them and their daughters while simultaneously watching their daughters change or competing in their sports. I don't buy it. I think that these men are just weak-kneed. They're unwilling to stand up against this loud, small majority that's just speaking louder than us, which I really think the loud minority needs to change. We need to become the loud majority because we really are, in fact, the majority. Over 75% of our country is in support of us. And so I think it's time they hear our voices and hear us roar, really, which I think they are, which is super empowering.
Well, there have been instances where men have been put in as with women in prisons. We have known of rapes. We have seen this in the locker rooms, in the transgender locker rooms. So this is not just a matter of a child seeing a male adult. This is now a male predator being placed among innocents. And that is the one thing that should scream and roar out to the public, because these are men who could not compete as a male in their own world, in their own sports or career or whatever. So then, because they feel so inadequate, what do? They then feel superior to any woman who cannot physically outdo them. And that's what it is.
It really does. It makes you question the true intentions of these men who are going into women's sports and women's locker rooms, et cetera. Is their true intention to, you know, just quietly, you know, identify how they identify and go about their lives? Well, that's not what we saw at the NCAA meet, where I and many others were forced to change in a locker room with a man named Leah Thomas, who I mentioned already. That's not what we encountered. He was proudly there and present in the locker rooms. Normally, people who suffer with gender dysphoria are dysphoric about the parts of their bodies that make them the sex in which they are. And they want to hide that part of themselves. They don't want people to know. And they just kind of want to put their heads down and under the sand and not be noticed. But that wasn't what we saw. He changed right in front of us. And we knew this was a man. He was 6'4", towering over all of us in the locker rooms. And you would think that he wouldn't want to show us that, you know, if he's really dysphoric. So it really makes you question the true intentions of why these men are going into our spaces. And it's really scary, you know.
This is a point that I've always said. There are a small minority, less than 1% of 1%, that have an actual gender dysphoria. And for that, yes, they do need medical assistance, psychological and medical assistance to help them transition to whatever. There are people that are simply born that way. They're hermaphrodites. There are other causes that have them do that. And for them, they have our love and sympathy. But when you have a physical man who cannot compete as a male and decides that in order to succeed, he has to take on what they call the weaker sex, because they know physically we cannot outdo them. They have a different body strength, and different build. If you're saying this to a young child that, who has not developed through puberty, that is one thing. But once they pass through puberty and they gain that male testosterone to build all that, they will be physically stronger than a woman, period.
Yeah, and on top of that, especially when it comes to sports, it's clearly unsafe. You know, we talked about the women's boxing at the Olympics. It's unsafe. I know another female athlete, her name's Peyton McNabb. She's from South Carolina or North Carolina, one of the Carolinas. She was playing in a tournament against a team that had a male competitor. And he jumped up, spiked the ball, hit Peyton right in the head. And to this day, she still has weekly doctor's appointments. She suffered a permanent brain damage, neurological damage. She didn't go to college to compete in the sport of softball. That she actually, volleyball wasn't her top sport. She had a scholarship to compete. And she wasn't able to pursue that dream because of this male athlete. So it's really sad what we're seeing. We're seeing women get hurt. Not just our opportunities being taken away, but we're seeing them get hurt on the playing field. It's crazy, Anne.
It is actually, their lives are destroyed. Any hope for a future and a path they dreamed of is gone. All because a male with an ego just could not turn around and say, well, fine, I'm not great at basketball or whatever, and find something else to do. No. because they have to feed that ego. They have to turn around and best those that he knows that he can best easy, a female. And in today's society, you're seeing men beat up women and it's condoned and not condemned. And that's the shame of that. And that's what the Riley Center is fighting. Now, if someone were to contact them, what would be the process for them to come through and, you know, become an ambassador like you?
Yeah, so you can go to our website at therileygainscenter.org. There you can see our list of ambassadors. We have a button on there that you can actually reach out for help if you're seeking advice or just counsel on a situation that you're in. Whether you're an athlete, a parent, a coach, an administrator, I urge you to reach out to us. That'll actually go to me. So I will be the person who will respond to that message. But I urge you to reach out to us. Let us know what's happening. We definitely want to help you because we know that this is happening across the country. And the more people that we can get talking about it, the more people we can get at school board meetings, at meets and in protests of what's happening, the sooner we'll start to make a difference. And so I would urge these people to reach out to our center, receive some education. Even just starting conversations in your local areas can be super impactful because a lot of people don't know how to deal with these issues when they arise. If you're an athlete on a team, talking with your teammates about how you're going to go about this, even if you haven't been impacted already, know what you're going to do if you're faced with a male competitor, and have that prepared and thought about before you're faced with that situation. So reach out to us. We want to help. Go to therileygainscenter.org for that.
Man, there's a lot of work to do out there. Now, is there a movement now to change the legislation?
There's definitely a lot of pushback. You know, as I mentioned, there's 26 states suing the Title IX rewrite. And our hope really is, ultimately, it'd be nice to get some better leadership in our country, really. But yes, we are continuing to fight in state to state. With legislators passing bills, such as the Women in Sports Bill, Save Women in Sports Bill, which prevents males from competing in women's sports. We're passing legislation like the Women's Bill of Rights, which has been passed in many states that basically codifies and defines sex-based terms like woman, male, man, male, female, boy, girl, which prevents people from misinterpreting Title IX, because a lot of people can misinterpret now what a woman is, saying a woman is a man that identifies as a woman, which is untrue. So we're working state to state. It is a long process. Sometimes it feels like an uphill battle, but we're definitely seeing the tides turned, as I mentioned. So we're working on that. It's just going to take some time. It would be helpful, though, to get some better leadership.
Well, Caitlin, you're there at therileycenter.org and you're doing a lot of great work. And I don't know if you want to hang around because I have coming up with us Nanette Holt from the Epoch Times, who also is a Title IX advocate. You want to hang around or do you need to run?
I have a few minutes. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Let me bring in Nanette. And welcome, Nanette.
Hi. Good to see you.
We got our friend, Mark Tapscott, on here. Every other week. I've known Mark now for about, 12, 14 years.
He is fantastic. What a great newsman he is.
Oh, he's my baby doll. He is my baby doll. Now, over at the Epoch Times, or the Epic Times, as I call it, you happen to be one of the senior editors, and you also are an advocate for Title IX, which passed in 1972. And we're going on, quick math, 42 years it's been. But we've seen people trying to change it, to alter it, to now intend that the word sex is malleable. What articles have you and what research have you the teeth in backwards, have you been doing over there?
Well, we have written a lot about Title IX. And just to clarify, we really seek to illuminate both sides of the issue, which we feel is missing in a lot of media. So, you know, we want to give people both sides of the arguments rather than really serving as an advocate. I think as a company, we do have a position that, a lot of this stuff is wrong. But we do seek to let readers make up their own mind. But we have written quite a bit about, the harms of Title IX because, it's there's a lot out there in the mainstream media talking about how, you know, these protections are needed for, you know, transgender identifying people, so that boys who say they're women can go where they're most comfortable, or boys who say they're women can compete in sports. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, we have to do what's right for them. But then, you know, as we've seen, women are harmed, children are harmed. There are a lot of harms. There are actually harms now to teachers, instructors who have deeply held religious beliefs. If they choose not to affirm someone by pronouns that don't agree with their biological sex, they can be fired. In Minnesota, in the state of Governor Tim Walz, who seeks to be our next vice president, he has made it so that a teacher who does not affirm a transgender individual with the correct pronouns, with the pronouns of that person's choice, that person can be banned from teaching just by simply saying, I can't do this. This goes against my deeply held religious beliefs. So, you know, in Minnesota now, under his leadership and under his direction, this is Governor Tim Walz, you know, teachers don't have that freedom. It's quite something. It's, you know, Title IX was set up to protect women and their opportunities in education and in sports. But what we've seen is that it has become an attack on women. So that's what we've been writing about.
And the transgenders are trying to make it a civil rights issue, but it was a civil rights issue for us in the 60s and 70s. You know, as I explained earlier, you know, I was still in junior high when Title IX was coming forward and I was entering high school. For me, it was perfect because now all of a sudden we were had sports too available to us that we never had. You know, the boys played softball, but we never had a girls softball team. The boys played hockey. We never had one. And it gave us the opportunity now to actually be able to have a chance and maybe be noticed for a scholarship going into school and advancing. But then it also expanded into the workplace so that we had opportunities to seek careers where in the past we had been barred from. I mean, I remember in the 80s, actually yeah, mid-80s, entering into the police department, and we were like only 10 to 20%. And the harassment we got was unbelievable. But we had the opportunity to go in there, and many of us went forward and succeeded for my generation. So we benefited it. Now we're seeing the generation 2 and 3 down, like Caitlin and her future generation, being destroyed by the very thing that we put in place to help them. And it breaks my heart. It drives me crazy that this wordsmithing that we have in today's society can so destroy such a great Title IX thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the Biden-Harris administration has really tried hard to push through this new language, all really to prevent what they see as discrimination against people who identify as transgender. But, you know, this new language changes everything. I mean, it's the new rules would say that states would be in violation of Title IX, which would be able to remove all their federal funding in education. If students who identify as transgender are barred from bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their chosen gender identity, which it's hard to keep up. I mean, it can be a bit fluid. We've followed people who, you know, one week this is a man, the next week it's a woman. That person could eventually identify as a mermaid or a unicorn. I mean, there's an infinite number, and I'm quite serious about that. There's an infinite number now of gender identities. So, you know, you wonder how far this slippery slope is going to take us. But one thing that I think is so people need to be aware of for everyone is the new rules would also consider it a hostile environment, would consider hostile environment harassment if someone does not use a person's preferred pronouns. So talk about wordsmithing. I mean, these pronouns, there are an infinite number of pronouns. And it can, you know, we've seen that even unintentional misgendering, as it's called, not using that person's declared pronouns, which again, fluid change quite frequently, it seems like with some people, you know, you can face some pretty severe consequences. We've talked to students who have faced severe consequences in school for accidentally misgendering someone or, you know, using those wrong pronouns. A teacher can be fired. And we saw in Ireland that a teacher who was not willing to go along to get along was actually arrested. So it kind of makes you wonder how long until Americans are arrested for intentional or unintentional misgendering and not using those pronouns. So it's really disturbing in the landscape right now is that 26 states have been fighting this in some way, this new language in the lower courts, filing lawsuits. We have the 10 states that went to the Supreme Court. 24 states have said, we're abiding by this. A lot of people are quite alarmed because they're seeing free speech under attack. And it's a real concern at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, you said it, so you hit on it, Nanette, about the pronouns and the abiding by the biologically incorrect pronouns, as I like to say. But what's crazy even so is, say, a 17-year-old girl fresh out of high school goes off to college for the first time away from her parents. If she gets housed, she can actually be housed with a man. And say she feels uncomfortable about this or simply goes to her school board and asks for a new roommate, she can be charged with sexual harassment. And if that's not mind-blowing enough, I don't know what else would be. It's scary what's happening. Anne mentioned it being a civil rights issue for, you know, the argument of the trans people. Well, what I would like to know is what rights do we have that they don't have? You know, it's our right as women to have privacy in our bathrooms, in our locker rooms, in our, you know, areas of undressing. And to put a man in there, I've been in that environment, and it is the most humiliating experience. It's traumatizing. And so I just can't imagine what's happening and what's going to happen as we enter this new school year to these young girls across the country in their bathrooms, in their locker rooms, by allowing these boys to go into their bathrooms and change. They say, I think it's 1 in 3 women have, obviously older women, but are young as well, have been sexually assaulted. What about those victims who are put in these environments where now men are being allowed to go into these environments? That is so traumatizing on top of the trauma that they've already experienced. And it shouldn't be allowed. That's ultimately, I feel like that is a civil rights, you know, issue for women, because we're seeing those rights being taken away.
That's such a good point.
Well, under the Trump administration, he changed things, made things a little bit easier, because women that were assaulted would come forward and make a complaint, and it would turn around and it would backfire on them, where they then would be discriminated against a second time. And in one instance, a woman went as she was making her complaint, it counted on her so badly that the school had her institutionalized. And we're watching that the way that they say that, all right, if I came forward with a complaint that a man posing as a woman assaulted me and I make a complaint, now I'm the one doing the sexual harassment, is what is happening. And now Trump was trying to alter that, and he made it clear and convincing evidence must show that you have an assault. It must go forward behind law enforcement. He tightened everything to protect women. And what did the Biden-Harris administration do? Blew it wide back open again, and now reversed everything.
And this
I
was going to quickly mention, because I have to hop off, and this is the same administration that proudly and, you know, boldly says that this is the administration for women. And so these are the people who should be standing up and fighting for us and not allowing these men into our sports, into our prisons, into sororities, into domestic violence shelters, into our private spaces. It's the same administration who should be fighting for us, yet they're not. They say they're supposed to be progressive, but this is, like we see in the Title IX instance, this is not progressive. This is regressive. We're regressing 52 years when Title IX was enacted back in 1972. We're regressing prior to that, which blows my mind. But I just want to say thank you, Anne and Nanette. It's so lovely to meet you both. I have to hop off here, but please continue the conversation.
Thank you, Caitlin, and God bless. People can find you at radicalfeminist.org.
Yes, God ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Nanette. I gather we're both about the same age, because I came through and I was in school just as Title IX came through as I entered high school. And for me, it was great. And it gave us opportunities we never had before. Now, I had some athletic skills, but I wasn't someone that said, well, I'm going to go and get a scholarship. But I had friends that were, that did seek that. And that's now been taken away. And what people don't understand, Title IX is tied to federal funding.
Exactly. Yeah, that it's always a money issue, isn't it? It always goes back to the money.
Oh, the money. But what people are trying to do now publicly, and what this administration is trying to do, is apply Title IX to things that are not federally funded into private charities, churches. It's putting it into businesses, but it's supposed to be tied to only federal funding. And that's
right. There is that creep into the rest of society. Really, it only legally applies to educational environments. But yeah, we're seeing that creep because it sets a precedent. And then until someone challenges it in court, it's just going to keep creeping. So people have been asking us, well, which are those 10 states? Which ones were the ones that got this Supreme Court ruling that said, okay, you don't have to enforce this new language until we get this sorted out in courts? Those states were Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, Idaho, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, and Virginia. They're the ones that have really, stood up and continued to fight this. Some of these states in the 26 that have decided not to abide by this new language, they have fought and they have gained victories sooner in the court. So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, they really, they need to hold on to their federal money, but they're just not willing to go by this new language that they feel is discriminatory against women, as you have pointed out. I do think it's really interesting that we're evaluating candidates now for president. And Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota has been a big player in Title IX, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But
please do. Tampon Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, well, he's the running mate of the Vice President Kamala Harris, and he's a major player in this Title IX debate. So, and he's actually, I have a little scoop for you. I mean, he's about to be sued for that by a pretty big legal firm that takes on these kinds of issues.
I think it's like $250 million. Is that the number that I saw out there today?
Well, this particular lawsuit has not dropped yet. It's a big one, and they're coming after him. And this is why they take issue with him. So in Minnesota last month, a policy that was directed by him to become policy requires teachers to affirm students who identify as transgender in order to receive or keep their teaching license. So if Christians or say Muslims who also would object to affirming someone who, a boy who says he's a girl or a girl who says she's a boy, if they say, I can't do that, that goes against my religious beliefs, they will be banned from teaching in Minnesota public schools. I think that's pretty interesting. That was his policy, and he has been successful in getting that through in Minnesota. Also, in March of 2023, he issued an executive order declaring Minnesota to be a trans refuge. Okay. So that means that state will no longer abide by federal or state laws. So he signed that later. He got some legislation through, made that a law. And so now that means that other states cannot interfere with gender affirming care of people that flee those states and come to Minnesota. Puberty blockers, hormones, gender altering surgeries on minors. The law actually that he directed and he wanted to see put into place, the law encourages children to run away to Minnesota and incentivizes parents from other states to violate court orders and custody agreements and the rights of the other parent. It encourages minor children to run away from home because Minnesota will actually help them get gender altering surgeries once they cross that Minnesota state line. So, this huge law firm, nonprofit, has all these laws that they've sent me that they say his policy violates those, including policies that are in the US Constitution, the law, the supreme law of the land. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I haven't seen the lawsuit yet. It's not quite ready, but when it is, we're going to write about it.
Man, I mean, kids, they go on this social media, and it's no longer like when you and I grew up, you ran out the house, you ran down the street to your best friend, knocked on the door, and you hung out. Now it's FaceTime. It's no human interaction. And these children are now growing up without understanding that. So there's a social misdevelopment They're missing a piece. And we now have a 14-year-old that goes on a shooting spree because they lack the human interaction and contact. So whatever's going on at TikTok or Facebook or X or whatever you call it, those are their friends.
Right.
Not someone that can physically walk up, shake the hand, hug, you know, and go out and play a game with, you know, baseball or basketball. But no, it's all on the telephone, all on their smart device, all on the computer, and we're losing it. It's what is it? There was a Isaac Asimov book where he wrote iRobot. We are becoming iRobot. And this is what we're fighting, and we have to support the original Title IX and support the changes that Donald Trump did to it to help preserve our humanity before we lose it. And I think that's the fight we have.
Yeah, that's such a strong and important point. People don't realize that this, if you really take a step back, which we've done and really analyzed on this whole issue, if you really step back, you can see that this is coming right out of a cultural Marxism playbook. I mean, Marxists would like to see us destroy the family in our country, separate all of us, not have those strong family bonds so that we will better comply with a Marxist government. And, it hasn't been a big secret. I mean, the Marxists, the trained Marxists will tell you this is kind of the aim. So people who aren't thrilled with this move in our society need to start stepping up, because the playbook is to just chip away and chip away. You start in education, you move out from there. I mean, when I say playbook, I mean, it actually has been written. It's policy. This is how Marxists operate. So they are really making inroads in our American society. If we don't like it, we got to fight it now.
Well, you know, if you think about that, first they were supporting abortion, kill the child before it's born. And then they turn around, end of life. We'll help you leave. So we'll get you on one end or the other. So now if we are supporting life and pro-life, then what happens is once that child is born, we'll find a way to prevent that child from ever having a future generation by physically altering them and making them unable to produce another generation. And that is how they will eliminate us.
That is so true. And in my own life, I know people who have made the decision to, you know, change genders, make that choice to live not in alignment with their biological sex, and, you know, put everyone through it. And then, you know, and had some devastating surgery, you know, mid-20s, completely sterilized, and then regretted it a few years later. I mean, that is so sad to me. Someone close to me is in a marriage. It's a strong marriage now, but has been sterilized. So these are two young people who can't share a child biologically. Of course, they could adopt a child in need of a home. But I just, you know, this is all coming at us, like you said, through social media. And it's a way for them to go past parents and get right to kids. And we know that even the tech people at the highest levels of the tech industry, they don't allow their kids on social media. I actually made the decision today to take my youngest child, who's 17, off of having a smartphone. I mean, I went out and purchased her a flip phone today, and that's what she will use, because I've noticed that the smartphone is just, it's just too much. It's too much taking over her life. So we removed it, and I hope I did it in time.
I hope so too. I hope so too. Walter Hoy wrote back, may have been as much as 10 years ago, I forget. It's called Sex Change Regret. He was someone who lived 8 years as a woman. And then when he realized, and he's been ostracized by the LGBT community because he did regret and then transed back. And we're having a lot of young people, as you said, in their 20s that are now having that regret. And I know people also in my life. I love them dearly. I mean, it is their choice. They made it as an adult. But the difference here we're seeing is they're taking it from a child. They're taking away the parents' authority. The taking away that child from the parents no longer has authority or control over that. And that's wrong. And then turning around a child who is not old enough to drive, not old enough to drink, not old enough to vote or smoke, not old enough to make an informed decision. And when the human brain is not sexually developed until around the age of 26, 27, you're taking someone 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, and even some as young as 5, and convincing them that this is right for their life. They can't make that decision. Only the parent can. And this is what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's so true. We have a report coming, a heartbreaking interview, actually, with a woman. She's in her 30s. She's a young mom. She's single. But she was telling us that she was in middle school, was not in the least bit gay. She was very interested in boys, but for whatever reason, her classmates decided to start picking on her and telling her she was gay. This happened for years. And she, really tried to fight against that. But the environment in the schools really kind of made it almost like it would be a cool thing for her to go ahead and adopt this identity. She was really ostracized until she adopted this identity. Then she was celebrated and affirmed. And this was even, I don't know, about 15 years ago. So it started, I think, before a lot of us caught on. She went on to lead a lesbian lifestyle for quite some time. She'd been raised in the church, and it started to kind of bother her. She felt like, I'm not sure that this is right. She just felt like she was kind of hearing the voice of God telling her she was not living the way that was really correct. So she reached out to her mom. Her mom came and got her. She started Christian counseling, which, by the way, is outlawed in places like Minnesota. They don't want people to seek the help of a Christian counselor who might try to tell them that an LGBT lifestyle is not correct. That's that actually under Tim Walz was banned in Minnesota in his state. But she did get that Christian counseling, came to the realization that she was confused, but it shouldn't have affected her gender identity or her sexual orientation. She went on to leave that lifestyle completely, and now she's the mom to a beautiful little girl. And she told us that she is so terrified by the way she sees in our society a continual attack on children. She's very sensitive to it because those suggestions, she believes, pushed her into a lesbian lifestyle as a child, as a young teen. So she's fearful for her own daughter, that her daughter will be pushed by shows for preschoolers. I mean, her daughter's a preschooler now. She sees it in television shows, even for children that young, and she knows the effects. She knows the power of that suggestion. And she's really trying to get her voice heard and say, why do we keep pushing this on children? Leave the kids alone. If they grow up and decide that they're transgender or gay, they can make a decision as an adult. But as a child, why are we attacking our children from every direction? And I will tell you, that is a play of cultural Marxists, and that's why we're seeing it.
It is, and they started back in the 60s with, in the early 70s, introducing home heck. What do they call it? It was like health.
Home heck.
Yeah. And they would say, oh, we're going to teach you about diseases like influenza and things like that. And then suddenly they started teaching about sexually communicated diseases. And then it grew and it grew and it grew. And as a young woman, young child in school, I sensed something was wrong. I knew the door was opening and I couldn't quite figure it out. And then it also dawned on me as I entered high school and they started to do the sex ed. They changed it from health ed to sex ed. And now we see how well it has expanded to the point where they're teaching actual sexual acts to young children. I'm sorry, we need to take our schools back. We need to turn around and stop this peer pressure that we see. And school guidance counselors, and see, they see it. They know how to intervene, but they're allowing other kids to do peer pressure, which is bullying.
Right. I mean, we've written about some of this comprehensive sexual education is what they call it. And the comprehensive part is that the kids are actually encouraged to not just assume that that they have a heterosexual identity, but that they should experiment before making that choice. And we've written about this a lot. And what was so alarming to me as we were writing about this is that there are actually nonprofit organizations that receive a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars in grants from the federal government to take these very graphic sexual education programs around to the school districts and to persuade the school districts and the local communities to start using this sex education that promotes, hey, choose your gender identity and choose your sexual orientation while we experiment through this class. So, you know, these are your tax dollars at work. And that's why I just tell people, hey, it's important to know what's going on. People say, oh, there's too much bad news. I don't want to read the news. I don't want to listen to anything. You got to know what's going on, because if you want to defend your society, you got to know what's going on. And then you got to start paying attention and speaking up. If that's the society you want, then that's the path we're on. But if you don't like it, you need to really be involved.
Yes, amen to that. Amen. We're down to our last few minutes of the show, and I managed to get through it without my co-host. Only a few brain farts, folks. Well, Nanette, people can find you at the Epic Times, which is theepictimes.com, or as Mark always chastises me, go, the Epoch Times.
We all in-house, we all fight about the pronunciation. Just as long as you read us and watch our TV programs, we're happy.
And Mark will be back with us next week, so we'll have a lot of fun with him. Nanette, thank you very much. If you do see him, give him a hug from me.
I will do that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and God bless. And
check God bless you.
At the Epoch Times, and Mark will be with us next week. We're down to our last few minutes. I want to thank everyone for sticking around. I see a bunch of people. Great. I'm sorry I missed a couple of comments. But hey, thank you again. And we will be back, same bat time, same bat station next week. And I wish you good night and God bless.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. Mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. In SDUBP, did God we trust? And the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America. America, we've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their eyes. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. For the friends I have loved and lost, and I still believe in God we chose, and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America.
America. Save America. Let's save America.
Together we can save
America.